Riviera Radio. Business.
Morning, Henkel.
Good morning.
How are we today?
Fine, thank you. Good to be back with you.
Wet weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a bit wet weekend. Managed to get out on the bikes with young Henry. Had a little bike ride, which was rather pleasant, but nothing too dramatic in lockdown Britain.
And no barbecuing.
No barbecuing. And of course, if you come this way, you'll be forced to quarantine for 2 weeks. So that is a good incentive for you to stay away.
Yeah, more about that in the press review coming up in about 5 minutes' time. Okay, markets, as you were just saying, an amazing week on equities last week.
Yeah, despite the violent protests breaking out on the streets of major US cities and around the world, it has to be said, and rising geopolitical tensions, global equities continued their meteoric recovery from the March lows. Investors tracked the path of the pandemic, the reopening of economies and the ramping up of stimulus measures. It was a week of impressive gains in equity markets. S&P 500 rose 4.9% over the course of the trading week. Biggest weekly advance since April the 10th, now up 45.7% from its low back on March the 23rd, just 5.9% below its record high on February the 14th. European equities surged to a three-month high last week. They've risen over the past 3 weeks. Stock 600 was up 7.1%. Stocks bank index was up 17% last week, generating its best week since March 2009. Oil stocks, the second best performing group, as OPEC Plus extended production cuts. I do think we need to be a little bit careful here, sound a note of caution about equity markets' ability to maintain the recent momentum. We would expect a period of consolidation given the ongoing uncertainties over the pandemic, elevated valuations and limited earnings visibility.
How did the economists get the non-farm payroll numbers so wrong?
It's the biggest shock probably I've seen in my 2 decades of being at the bank, it has to be said. Investors watch the US labour market very closely indeed because it has implications for consumer spending, which is the major driving force behind the world's largest economy. Put it in some sort of context, the numbers. Coming into the pandemic, US unemployment rate was down at 3.8%, which is a multi-decade low. Locking down of the US economy, of course, encouraged employers to cut jobs at an unprecedented rate during the course of April. 20.5 million jobs, remember, were lost in April. That represented the sharpest increase, the highest unemployment rate since the Great Depression. The markets were bracing themselves for a multi-million payroll decline. Consensus for a loss was another 7.5 million jobs. The actual report, I say, unparalleled upside surprise, suggesting Americans are getting back to work and points to April potentially being the low point in terms of the key data. The US economy created 2.5 million jobs last month. The unemployment rate declined to 13.3%. Market was looking for a figure north of 19%. Report highlights, I guess, the intense flexibility of the US labour market, the resilience of the US economy. Although I think many economists, as you say, have such a difference compared to expectations, will be looking at the data for compilation issues, revisions, reclassifications of workers, and the impact of the payroll protection program, all in an effort, I guess, to get a true picture of what's really taking place in terms of the US labour market.
Yeah, the consensus was that there would be 8 million more job losses. And as you said, they put on 2.509 million jobs. I mean, it's a massive, massive difference.
Yeah, quite incredible. I think if Friday's number is verified, continues, would be seen as a meaningful step in the road to recovery, will be supportive both consumption and sentiment. Although we should remember, we don't expect the unemployment rate to return to pre-pandemic levels in the foreseeable future.
And the B word has resurfaced, Brexit. So negotiations came to an end last week without any agreement. It looks like there's going to be a big powwow summit in October, but both sides giving very little ground at the moment.
Some big sticking points continue. Apparently, the level playing field commitments, the UK continues to stretch the EU's demands for a level playing field, which would see the UK aligned with EU standards in areas such as environment and workers' rights. Governance and the form of the agreement, the UK is continuing to press for individual agreements with discrete governance and dispute resolution mechanisms. It's also disputes over fishing quotas, financial services equivalents, the role of the European Convention on Human Rights, along, of course, with the Northern Ireland Protocol. So lots to get through in relation to that. The government continues to rule out requesting an extension to the transition period, which is due at the end of this year. Their position is that extending would simply prolong the negotiations, create even more uncertainty, and that the UK would go on around trading with the European Union and World Trade Organization rules come 2021. No agreement has been reached. Under the withdrawal agreement, any extension needs to be agreed by the 1st of July. However, there continues to be speculation about what might happen towards the end of the year, the possibility of a short technical implementation extension, another fudge there, if an agreement hasn't been reached. So we wait to see what happens.
Well, do you think some people are starting to feel that they might have been cheated? Because the alarm bells have been ringing over the last few days, with the government suggesting it might drop its food standards with the United States. For example, the infamous chlorinated chicken could be making your way onto its dinner, your dinner table.
Yes, of course, the UK is in a much more flexible position to go out and do its own trade arrangements, and they've been looking particularly to the United States to try and kick that process off. But as a result of that, they will need to make concessions, and that's certainly been food standards has been one element that that many commentators have been focusing on. So a long way to go doing those international deals. Most important for the UK continues to be, of course, its relationship with its biggest partner, the European Union.
Well, we were told it would never happen. Theresa Villiers, Michael Gove, no, we will never drop our food standards. We will not accept chlorinated chicken. And now it's, maybe we will after all. Because it's, isn't it a case of if you want a trade deal with America, it's, the UK is just going to have to suck it up?
Well, you'd imagine the US is in a strong position to do so, and the UK vulnerable as a result of the coronavirus, but also of the Brexit uncertainty, and needs to show to the world that it can make progress, and given some of that freedom, some of that flexibility to go out and do trade agreements, the United States will certainly be top of that list.
Well, if you ever invite me out for lunch again at the Gaucho, I'm certainly not having the spatchcock chicken, that's for sure.
I wasn't intending on inviting you again, to be honest with you.
Thank you very much. Nice to know you've got friends. Foreign exchanges, please.
Pound against dollar coming in at 1.27 this morning. Euro dollar coming in at 1.12.5. And you're going to get 1 euro 12.5 cents for your British pound this morning.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day.
Speak to you tomorrow. Hank Potts and Barclays.